welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And this is the podcast where we talk about everything Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra related. Tony, where can they find us online?
On Instagram and Twitter at The Arrow Pod.
The Arrow
Pod.
No cast, just pod. Yo, Tony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing better. Better every day. I think I mentioned that last week.
Yeah.
New job, new environment, different clientele. I'm a therapist now. I'm like, oh gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing like legitimate therapy. Not just in an internship, not just like at a college. Well, I mean, not to say like at a college campus isn't as like real as anything, but like when I was doing it, it was very like minuscule things, like even like my clientele was like, oh, freshman trying to learn what college is. Someone has anxiety because they're overloaded on their classwork,
right?
And then now this is like into, oh, I have a 42-year-old a Mexican-American male who has like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and has been addicted to methamphetamines for like 21 years.
Right.
It's like, oh, like this is pretty different. And
yeah. I wonder, like, when you were doing therapy at the college campus, were they kind of like shepherding specific kinds of students over towards you, or?
Yeah. I mean, I worked at Disabled Student Services, so every individual had some sort of learning disability or physical disability.
Right.
So essentially, that's why they had this assistance in counseling purposes.
So you weren't actually in like counseling and psychological services.
No.
Okay.
So not psychological services. It was like actually like just counseling and like assisting them with anything that they need.
Right.
Like pertaining to their disability. But
right.
Most of them, like there was a handful of them that, you know, were coming in because they suffered from anxiety or depression or, but like, it was very, it wasn't ever anything as severe. Like the most severe was like one of my clients, I had schizophrenia, but she was on medications. So, I mean, she was able to deal with it for the most part fairly well. So it was like very minor things, definitely. And then it was more focused towards just like how to handle, you know, college life and the stresses and organization and stuff.
Yeah. When you're going to DSS, you're not necessarily going to your counselor because you're trying to get therapy. You're going to your counselor because you're trying to get assistance, right? Which is like a different kind of experience. So yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
So
nice. I mean, it's a different animal. it's really hard.
Uh-huh.
But like I mentioned, every day's a little bit better, and that's kind of just what I'm striving for.
Nice. Good job. I'm proud of you.
How you doing?
Dude, I'm like so tired this week. I started off the week, like didn't go to work, wasn't feeling great, had some like personal health issues, and then just like not been sleeping very well. And my voice kind of hurts today.
Oh no.
So, I mean, that's not too uncommon at this point, but...
That's a weekly occurrence now.
Yeah, I think it was... What was it? What was I doing on... not this morning, because I streamed this morning, but it was the stream on Wednesday and my sessions yesterday. My last 3 days of work had been, like, really vocally intensive between, like, therapy and streaming. And so I feel kind of... I feel kind of spent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Can't wait to like, I can't wait for like the holiday next week, but then that's like 2 days off. And then I actually for me, because I already get Fridays off, it's only one day off.
Yeah. After work Thanksgiving.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Like that's that same, like, until like 11:30 shift or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So I'm working all afternoon on Thanksgiving. For us, it's like if you're scheduled for a holiday, you work a holiday, unless like only a handful of people can actually request it off. So the facility can still work and operate efficiently. So there's just like only a handful of people that normally are able to get it off, and everybody else has to work.
Yeah. And I guess that's like the, it depends on like are you working county? Are you working private practice? Mm-hmm. Like those kinds of things. Like I work at, I mean, I work for the government working at a state school, but at the same time, because of that, the whole school shuts down, right? Mm-hmm. Like we are included in that. So
yeah.
That, you know, gives and takes, right?
Yep. Yep. But yep.
Anyways, what are we here to talk about today, Tony?
We're here to talk about episode 8, Remembrances.
Remembrances. All right, so we got 10 minutes to talk about this episode with you guys, so let's go. Nah, I
forgot about this episode.
Did not remember it happened, and ironically, it being called Remembrances, there's a reason. There's a reason why we don't remember this episode. Like, and in fact, before we recorded, I was like, should we just like skip this one? And like we're not skipping it, but like, I don't think it makes sense to even like rate this episode. It doesn't necessarily make sense to talk about this episode in the same way that we normally do.
Yeah.
This is like the worst version of a filler episode where they. It's not the worst version. It's close to the worst version of a filler episode where they just kind of replay scenes from the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, the last kind of recap of these three was pretty interesting. I found it pretty enjoyable. First two were, like you mentioned, were kind of just like literally like flashbacks of memories of old episodes and a little dry. But yeah, I honestly don't think I've watched this episode more than once, other than this, you know, this time I had to watch it to write notes. So I'm most likely I've only watched it like when it aired on TV and probably never went back to it.
I remember showing this the second half of the show to someone back in college, and when she and I were watching it, we got to this episode and I was like, this happened? And we watched 5 minutes and I'm like, we're not watching this, like, just go to the next one.
I did not remember this was a thing.
Yeah, neither did I until we got here and I was like, oh, I remember skipping this episode again. So this episode is I don't know. How do you want to start this? I don't necessarily know.
We could just go through it chronologically, like a regular episode. I mean, there's not much. I mean, we're not going to dive into too much of the details.
I wrote three notes, so.
Yeah, I know. You told me prior to this. I mean, the first one goes into like Mako and Prince Wu's interaction. So apparently Prince Wu believes he needs to get toughened up. And I found this scene so funny because like Mako just punches him once, like a very light punch, and then Wu down, like he just drops to the floor. I'm like, I feel like that's like me and Chandler. Like anytime like I make a move towards you, you wince up.
Dude, you're scary. What are you talking about? You're like so scary. You come at me so aggressively.
That's why I'm like, oh, it's the same interaction. Like make a move towards
Mako, Mako barely like did anything. You come at me with the intent to kill, and it's different. It's different.
But it just reminded me, I'm like, that Prince Wu is definitely Chan.
No. don't put that in people's heads. I am not Prince Wu. I'm tougher than Prince Wu.
Sure. I mean, by percentages, maybe like 10% tougher.
No. Well, also, Mako is like I could have taken a punch from Mako, but like you're like the boulder, Tony. Like, would you rather take a punch from Mako or from the boulder?
I don't know. Depends on the situation.
that's not an answer. Anyways, keep going.
Oh, right. And then, so Prince Wu kind of just complains because he's like, well, I'm like, I'm not like you, Mako. I wasn't raised by a pack of cops in the woods. Uh-huh. And it's like, you don't know anything about me, do you? And it's like, you know what? No, I don't. Why don't I know anything about you? It's like, because you never, you know, ask. You never like have any interest towards me. So it's pretty funny because it really does. It just kind of shines the light that we already see towards the Prince Wu of, you know, really just caring about himself and being very self-centered because they've been together for quite a while now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they even go to the bathroom together. but the fact that Prince Wu literally knows nothing about Mako, like he didn't even know his grandmother and the rest of his family were staying in a Republic City, like in one of Asami's homes.
Right.
Like, the fact that, like, you truly know nothing about him and you never really take the opportunity to ask, but you felt so connected to this person that you're like, oh no, he has to come to me with to Ba Sing Se to continue to be like my bodyguard.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Woo, like you can tell that there's a person in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like there is a person in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
somewhere. Yeah. That's the thing. Like we see, when what was it, like first episode where he got like chased down by the radicals?
That was like that wasn't first episode, that was like 2 or 3 or something like that.
Oh yeah, that was like 3. That was 3. Mm-hmm. But we kind of saw that change when Mako kind of approached him and told him, you know, facts of like, hey, like, you know, you, what have you done for the people? What effort or anything have you really done to prove that, you know, you're worthy of being the ruler of the Earth Kingdom? Mm-hmm. And it really seemed like from that point, like he kind of was able to see like, hey, you know, no one's ever talked to me about that. We hope to see a change in Prince Wu. But from at this point, like there's still not much there. Like we still don't see that evolution yet.
I think that there's a lot to be said about Prince Wu's evolution kind of being driven by kind of these two experiences, right? One, Mako saying like you don't mean anything, and two, I would assume like Korra's like non-reaction to him,
yeah,
right? Like, and I don't think that's been really explored yet, but I think that there's like this idea of like, wow, like no one's ever just like not cared about me. like I don't know. There's something. I feel like there's something like. There could be something refreshing about that. Like, wait, like, this person treated me differently, but, like, it wasn't, like, hurtful, right? Like, it didn't seem like Prince Wu was, like, really incredibly hurt by it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I would like to see that idea being a little bit more explored as well.
Yeah.
But as Wu was trying to get to know Mako, he asks if Mako has a special lady in his life.
Yeah, and then... we get into this whole mess of a story of Mako's past. I mean, this was the one that I personally didn't like. This was the one that I liked the least. Because, I mean, we've had like this complaint of like the focus on Mako and Korra and the Sami's relationship and how it was so prominent in the first season, and it kind of bled into a little bit into the second season. And then now we're kind of recapping that where it's just like, hey, you know, we kind of touched base with this last time around as like the trio were back together. And it's just like, we're going to drive it home now.
These things that are like not consequential.
Yeah.
Really too, right? Like it's like this, it's like, let's like, I don't know. Man. It's like, hey, everybody, let's sit down and talk about like the worst part of the show again. We hashed through it for 2 seasons. We thought it was gonna work. It didn't, and we're just here to remind you, it didn't work.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there was definitely some save face here where they were trying to explain like this, the timelines and everything. Because, I mean, he explained like, oh, like I you know, started feeling like I had a special connection with Korra, and then I met Asami, and then I kind of rejected Korra, but I did have those feelings for her, and so I wasn't truly honest with her. Then going back to, like, oh, we broke up, and then I kissed Asami, and it's like, I know that was bad, but Prince Wu kind of jumping into that mix and be like, oh, no, like, you broke up with Korra, and, you know, you ended that relationship, so you are... You're free to, you know, do whatever you want and kiss someone.
Right. No, and he's 100% right there.
Yeah.
Like there,
yeah.
there was, as much as I hated it when it happened, yeah. Right. There was, you know, nothing like ethically really wrong with doing that.
Yeah. That's why I feel like with that conversation, they were trying to like save face of like, oh, remember this specific timeline? Like here, we're going to draw it out a little bit. So you know that like certain things were okay depending on like what just happened.
But then that gets, that all just gets erased when Korra comes back and doesn't have her memory and kisses you. And then you say nothing about it. Like,
exactly.
So any kind of goodwill and good faith that you get from, from actually doing things the right way goes away because you did things the wrong way multiple times in the first season. Yeah. And then you did something the right, technically the right way in the second season, but then you mess it up. So, like, I don't think you get credit for that. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, it was, like, at those specific instances, that's what they were, like, trying to explain the timeline. Yeah. Regardless of, like, what happens right after. I'm saying, like, that point they were trying to specify and kind of explain, like, here's the situation up to that point and why not every action was bad. And then, like you said, like, he ends up kissing her and not explaining. But they even show, like the first time we saw that with him not telling her they broke up. And kind of just continuing on and pretending things were okay. Like, everybody was there. And if I was placed in that situation, it would also be fairly awkward to be like, oh, you just kissed me? Like, let me tell you in front of everyone that, like, we actually broke up and this is, you know, this isn't a thing anymore. Which, you know, bring up those feelings again. So, I like, it's not, you know, I'm not trying to say he'd made the right decision, but it's definitely a difficult situation to be placed in and to kind of just expect to do everything correctly.
Right. I think one thing for me was that everybody kind of already knew it was happening. So
I'm not sure if everybody knew. That's the thing. Like, other than Asami and, like, maybe Bolin, like, I don't know if, like, Tenzin and Beifong and the president, like, knew anything about their relationship.
I don't know. The way that everybody's faces looked in that room, it looked like everybody knew that they, that Korra and Mako had broken up at the very least.
Like, yeah, that's the thing. I'm not sure. Like, even from their expressions, I wasn't really sure. Like, I didn't get that. Cause, like, who would have told, like, President Raikou, and, like, who would have told Tenzin and, like, these guards and, like, other people?
Maybe. I don't know. But I think that, like, some of the big players in the room, you know, you've got Bolin, you've got Asami, you've got Chief Beifong, you've got people who work in the police department who were there for the fight. Like, you know, like, I think that there is, like, that pressure there, which is where I think that as a person, like, if Mako was, like, a real person, I think this would have been the right route. And I think that, like, a writing perspective would have taken this in the right route, where you can still build up that tension, but say, like, now's not the time to talk about that. We need to focus on blank. And I think that that could have at least opened up some interesting, we've gone over this a lot, but that could have opened up at least some interesting, like, storyline and dialogue amongst Mako and Asami, around Asami saying, you need to tell Korra, and Mako, you know, having, you know.
Yeah.
He could still be, like, the bad guy there, but, like.
Yeah. He's not the smoothest talker, and we kind of see that. Like, even when he said that he broke up with Asami, it was, like, prior to them splitting up and, like,
oh, yeah, I want you to know how much I care about you.
Yeah. It's like, and, yeah, that was our, like, he's like, I think his cousin was, like, in that was you breaking up with her? He's like, yeah. He's like, what? Like, that, you thought that was a breakup? Like,
yeah.
Like, it was mutual. So we try, it's definitely, like, his cousin, I think, put it the best way. It's like, it seems like you're so afraid of disappointing anyone that you end up disappointing everyone. So he's definitely trying to be a people pleaser in various situations, but you can't please everyone.
Yeah.
And it seems like it took him a lot of time to be able to understand that I was like, I didn't want to, you know, bring up those feelings of pain. So I didn't, you know, mention that we broke up because I knew, like, how you felt the first time around. And I didn't want to bring up those feelings again, especially that in this very stressful situation of them having to go to the South Pole.
Right.
So he's definitely taking people's feelings into consideration, but, like, so much so that it stalls him from doing what he should be doing.
Yeah, and, I mean, yeah, I don't think we have to talk about it, like, too much more, but it's, it's like, you sat down in the writer's room and you were like, all right, we're gonna do the worst kind of filler episode, but we're gonna put a twist on it. We're gonna have funny commentary in there sometimes. And we got three stories to tell, three really, really important stories to tell here. Which one should we tell? And they're like, oh, what about the love triangle thing that we obviously abandoned for obvious reasons? It's like, that's a great idea. What?
You're promoted.
I guess, like, for me, there could have been, Like, you gave a story to Mako, Bolin, and Korra, which I guess makes sense. And I guess because Tenzin was a part of you know, Korra's story. Mm-hmm. I actually think I would have preferred having a Tenzin story as opposed to having a like, I think that, like, Tenzin, because Tenzin comes into Korra's story and talks about her growth and everything like that, and that's we'll get into that. But I think that if Tenzin talks about how he has seen so many people grow, like, he can talk about how he's seen Korra grow and, like, put a little bit of a tidbit of, like, her friends have grown as well. Like, these people, like, this guy, like, Bolin was this, and, like, look at him now, you know? Even if I think he's on the wrong side, like, he's convicted in trying to do the right thing, you know? Talking about, like, his children and how his children have grown and how they've evolved and how they've been shaped and how Jinora became an airbending master. Like, I think that those things would have been arguably more important to talk about in, like, a 10-minute segment than, like, the love triangle.
Yeah, definitely. Like that, like I mentioned, it's my least favorite one. It's not necessarily the most important storyline that they could have touched base with. I know it explains a lot of their personal relationships and what happened in previous seasons, but they definitely could have taken it in a different direction.
Yeah, and I think that, like, moving towards, like, the final setup, like, the last kind of thing that happens in the show, like, it feels like they're trying to set these things up, but not doing it.
Yeah.
Well, so anyways, let's move on to the next one.
Yes. So of Korra's, Korra finds herself with Asami. Asami offers her tea, and Korra kind of just tells her, like, I'm kind of reflecting back on everything, and something that Toph told her that was the world doesn't need the Avatar. But Asami's like, no, what are you talking about? Like, of course the world needs you. But she explained that, no matter what I do, the world seems to be out of balance. So she was so eager to be the Avatar. And I like the fact that she mentioned, like, I was so excited to be the Avatar. And we see flashbacks of her at, like, the compound. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, even though, you know, if someone's born as the Avatar, they have Rava's spirit inside of them. She didn't really consider herself to be the Avatar until she was out of the compound, until she was into the real world. And it wasn't like, I am the Avatar. It's like a position that I will eventually be able to attain.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why it's difficult to have expectations of a position or a view of it. And once you're in it, it doesn't meet expectations. And you're kind of fighting for it to be what you dreamt it to be. And it's not, and then I think for Korra, it was very difficult because she felt like she was training physically so hard to be able to become the Avatar that when she got to Republic City and kind of couldn't fix everything immediately just by fighting, I mean, getting arrested immediately for fighting, didn't make sense to her. And it was like my reality of what the Avatar is and can do was wrong. But I've been building it up for the entirety of my life.
Yeah.
So I found that pretty interesting that it was kind of a divide of her becoming the Avatar and not being the Avatar yet.
Yeah. I say this again, you know, one line that sticks with me for that Korra has said, and I think she said it once, but it sticks with me, right? She said, my entire life I just wanted to be the Avatar, and it feels like everyone's just trying to stop me. Right? And that line, I think it just, like, it really resonates with who that character is, because that's been her goal her entire life. Her goal her entire life has been become the Avatar. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so with that comes a lot of questions of identity. Right. If I don't live up to the expectation of what the Avatar is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Right. Then who am I really?
Exactly.
Right. And so it's interesting because she talks about how she was so terrified when Amon comes into the like when she first saw Amon. And first off, how great it was that she was able to actually use, like, that language. Like, I was terrified when I saw Amon take away someone's bending for the first time. And she talks about just about everything that had gone wrong in her plan to try to stop Aman. And then, and Asami is there, you know, she talks about Aman, she talks about Unalaq, she talks about Zaheer. And at every single turn of the situation, Asami is there to tell her, but Korra, you don't understand. Like, everything that happened that you just said is true, and you're not thinking about all of the good things that came out of that, right? You gave non-benders a voice. You opened up, you brought spirits back to the world, and you brought back the airbenders, right? And Korra, like, looks at everything that's happened to her over the course of the last 3 years as a failure of the self, right? A failure of the self, a failure of being able to develop the identity that you were supposed to be, that you were basically promised at birth. And Asami sees it as like, no, like, you might not have done the things that you thought you were going to do, but the things that you've done are incredible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's very easy to get into that negative mindset and focus on what I have not been able to accomplish or the failures that I have in my life. Because that's very prominent. I mean, that's just as a human being, that's what we focus on. We focus on the negativity, the things that we did bad, because that's what we need to remember to survive. It's not necessary to, you know, to remember the successes and the wins as much as the things that have failed in our lives.
Yeah.
So it's a very active mindset to be positive and to focus on our wins in our lives. So oftentimes it really takes someone externally like Asami to be able to be there to remind you of what the good that you've been able to accomplish and not necessarily just the fails.
Right. And I like what?
Go for it.
I was just going to say, I like that, that as Korra kind of goes back, and talks about Zaheer, and she was like, and I just realized that no matter what I do, everything that's happened is a result of what I've done, and I'm never going to be able to stop all the bad things in the world from happening. And Tenzin comes in and he's like, yeah, you're right. Like you can't, right? That everything that happens is cause and effect. Just because you do one good thing doesn't mean that that's not going to lead to another bad thing. That shouldn't stop you from doing good things. And I want you to think about who you've become, right? Like, and who the avatar, like you've been trying to become the avatar, but that avatar, that identity, what that means has changed for you with each one of those conflicts, right? You first thought that being the avatar just meant bending all four elements. And then you thought that being the avatar meant bringing balance to both the physical and the spirit worlds. And then now the avatar is someone who's going to do everything that she can to fight for others and to make sure that other people are safe. Yeah. The Air Nation wouldn't exist without you, right? And like that's not because you fought. That's because your idea of who the avatar was changed.
Yeah. It's a terrifying situation to fail. A lot of people try to avoid failure at all costs because it feels awful. And especially Korra in her position, if she fails, the world knows it.
Right.
It's a very public thing if she ever fails, and she feels the repercussions of those things. So for her, it's like, I need to constantly succeed. And like we mentioned prior, because she was so sheltered, most times when when she faced a situation, she had someone to assist her or she was able to succeed. So to learn to fail is very important, and it's something that she is trying to do over time, but she doesn't see that what Tenzin mentions is you need to, yes, you're going to fail. Like, that's inevitable in anything you do. We can't be perfect, but Tenzin mentions, like, you need to learn from those mistakes and better yourself over time. So these experiences make us who we are, and if you're willing to learn from it, then it's not truly a failure. It's just a stepping stone to the new you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, that's what I liked about it. Like, Tenzin comes in and shows Korra that it's not necessarily about winning or losing. It's not about succeeding or failing. It's about growth.
Yes. And that's why what you mentioned prior, if he would have continued that conversation with mentioning the rest of Team Avatar with his kids, with everybody, that would have been a very great progression into some more flashbacks. into yeah. like another set like story.
I think that for me, if I were to change the order of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. Also, remember, there could have been an episode called Tales of Republic City that would have replaced this, and it would have been so much better. If I were to replace these stories, and knowing we haven't talked about Bolin and Varric yet, I would probably have said, like, It's like, it's weird because you don't want to put Bolin and Varric first, but you also would want to put Korra and Tenzin together.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't want Bolin and Varric last if Tenzin had one. Unless you do. I guess Korra, Tenzin, Varric.
Yeah.
Because I think
it's a good order.
I feel like it's a bad choice to put Varric up front.
Yes.
I don't think that makes sense.
No, I mean, getting into Varric's story, they're kind of just on the boat with the escaped prisoners.
And Cowboy Bebop talks about how he'll never eat. What is he going to eat again?
I don't even know. I didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
But Varric kind of just pitches his, like, Bolin Nut Tuck, like, movie pitch to everyone. And it's essentially just a mixture of, like, all the villains in Avatar. So it's like, oh, it's the villain team up. They're fearsome foursome with Zaheer leading them, and they have a conference call. And like you see, like Batu with like the little like old telephone in his tree, and zombie Amon apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a whole crazy ordeal with them excluding Unalaq, the whole like. Villains wanting to take down Nuk-Tuk. Apparently, Nuk-Tuk eventually gets the ability to fly from a kiss from Opal. There's this like crazy storyline that he kind of ties in with like all the villains and different events of Bolin's past and stuff.
I really liked the whole like as the like they was it like Zaheer decided he was gonna team up with everybody and he like he calls a. He calls Batu, and it's like, "Hey Batu."
Oh, hey Zaheer.
And it's like, I'm glad I caught you at home. And then Amon is there, and then they're like, "Wait, don't tell the other guy." And he's like, "What do you not want to tell me?" And it's like,
it's not even Unalaq.
It's not like even Unalaq. It's the actor who played.
Yeah, the actor that played it.
Yeah. I thought that was good. That was a good touch. Man. Like, so the thing I like about this story is that it does give us something that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Oh my, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But hey, hey, we're going to leave this in, by the way.
Oh, okay.
We're,
I was about to pause.
We're leaving this in. Hey guys, calm down. Anyways, what I like about this is that it gives us something that we haven't seen before. But it's like entertaining, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it put a mix into the whole episode for me. I was like, okay, this is somewhat of an entertaining thing. It's kind of like in the realm of flashbacks, but you know, not true whatsoever. Yeah. It's all mixed up. And, even towards the end, Bolin kind of just mentions like, wait, you guys like that? Like, it didn't even make any sense. He's like, oh, it's a mover. Like,
don't think too hard about it.
Yeah, don't think too hard about it. There you go.
Mm-hmm. It's like a ride. Yeah, I think... So what do we learn about Bolin from this story? Nothing. Nothing at all.
That he can turn into a dragon and go into the spirit world and save the Avatar?
Yeah. Really nothing, but so the thing that I do appreciate about this though is that it does give us something different. It gives us something that's a little bit more entertaining. It's fun. I think that it's always just like fun to see Zaheer, not Zaheer. I mean, it's always fun to see Zaheer, but it's always fun to see Varric and Bolin interacting. And I think this is just kind of the purest form of that. Strangely enough, this part of the story felt the most consequential to me in any way, shape, or form, because. Because Bolin, I think for me, it's because of how Bolin talks about Opal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how he's like, I don't know if Opal's ever going to forgive me. And at least gives us some sort of tension to look towards in the future. I like literally got none of that from anything else that we talked about in this episode.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, that's interesting. Like the least factual story is actually the most consequential of the entire episode. But yeah, I don't have anything else to say about it. Really? I don't.
No, not really. It's just,
I can't believe we hit like 36 minutes on this episode somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I tried. I really tried. yeah. It's like I mentioned, it was a very forgettable episode. I honestly don't think I've watched this more than once prior because I just didn't remember this happened ever. Like you mentioned, I don't even think we can really rate this episode.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think we're close to being able to, but we're not. It was, it. Here's how I'll rate it, Tony. Was it a waste or nah?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I don't think it's like a total waste. Like it's entertaining enough, but it's not an episode. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But we'll be back with an actual episode next week, y'all. Wait, will we? I guess we will. Like, Thanksgiving is in the middle of the week. So for all y'all who are here in the United States, happy Thanksgiving this week. Stay safe, you know, make smart choices. We still need to contain the global health pandemic. Everybody in our international audience, I still hope you have a happy Thanksgiving day. happy Thursday to you all.
Yeah, happy Thursday.
But also, you know, all of you stay safe out there. You know, we're seeing a lot of cases spike, especially here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, be safe, take care of one another, and we'll talk to you all soon. Thanks everyone for listening. His name's Tony.
His name's Chandler.
And we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.